It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
There. It's funny. Just earlier tonight, I was talking about something, and I was clarifying that that something we were talking about was in regards to you. And I said, "You mean William, right?" And I was like, "Wait a second.
That's all. It's the cuffs."
Goofy cats. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that has finally given the internet an answer to the question, "So what else is on?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm Tony,
and I'm William. Uh-oh. This is episode 2.
You had one job.
240?
I believe so.
Okay. I think.
Seriously, what do I pay you?
You know what happened?
You forgot how to math?
No. Like, earlier today, I thought to myself, I got this. It's 240. I can remember that. And then I didn't check throughout the day. And so the part of my brain that says you have to check or you're not going to know is saying, you didn't check, so you don't know.
So you had too much faith in yourself.
No, there's just two guys. There's just two guys in there arguing with each other.
Yeah.
And one guy's saying,
"Only
hey,
two.
It's two." No, there's more than two. But these two guys, one's saying, "It's 240. I've known all day." And the other one's saying, "But you didn't check, so you couldn't possibly know." And so I had to, like,
I hate those guys.
I had to let them argue it out for a little bit. That's my
those
world.
Guys are jerks.
That's my world, is I've got all these people in there arguing with each other all the time, and I have to somehow communicate with people through all that.
So,
why do you like Tony?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm one of those guys.
You are one of those guys. In fact, one of the reasons I have you in there is because you actually help sort of sort all that out.
And because I'm so good looking. And you need a good looking guy in there.
I don't see you in there. I just hear you.
Is there?
Yeah.
All right.
You're not the only one. Like,
sounding.
Jazz, for example, she's in there.
Oh,
my wife's in there.
A little tiny Jazz showed up in my head recently. I am not happy having her there, but she's not going away so far.
My wife's in there. I mean, you know, my dad. So, I mean, there's a lot of people who I've known in my life who kind of take residence in there and sort of help me work things out when I am having a hard time working it out myself.
So, cognitively speaking, is there a difference between being able to add one to a number and being able to count?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a difference. Like, even if
I
you were doing a brain
like
scan or something.
Because earlier when I said learn to math with you, I was like, yeah, it's math, because he just has to add one each time. I'm like, or count. Which sounds like way less significant of a skill, even if you're just talking about adding one. But I'm like, I wonder if they're the same thing or not.
Well, the concept...
I do, but I don't podcast with them.
The conceptual difference is...
And I just thought of it.
The conceptual difference is any arithmetic you do is you're working with a logical system. And you're basically interacting with a logical system, and it's the same as if you were doing any kind of logical problem. Counting isn't an issue of logic.
It's memorization.
It's a... Well, it's a different thing conceptually.
There's a little bit of a schema involved.
Right.
But mostly you're just memorizing.
I suppose that's true. So it's a little more automatic. Like, you know, you know that ordinally this number follows this number. It's really this. It probably looks the same in your brain as reciting the alphabet. I wouldn't be surprised.
Do you know what subitizing is?
No.
I learned about this. I learned about this through my work with accessibility. Subitizing is a genuine skill that is separate from counting and stuff like that. That is the ability to, at a glance, know how many of a small number of objects there are. So, like, Well, the easiest answer is always playing cards. If the number 5 wasn't on the playing cards and you were seeing, like, the 5 of diamonds, you would know it is the 5 of diamonds not by counting the diamonds. You would just know it.
You'd know what a group of 5 looks like.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be in the traditional position. If you just saw 5 dots on there, you would know it was 5 dots. And the reason it came up in accessibility is because back in the day, it was a skill thing that you were supposed to learn in, like, preschool or kindergarten or something like that. And they just automatically opted out for blind kids. Because, of course, they can't, at a glance, do that. So it wasn't even on the skills. They're just like, no, they're blind, they can't do it. And then somebody one day was like, of course they can. You just have to get creative about it. And what they did was they took, there was a bowl of Tootsie Rolls that the teacher had on their desk, and they took some and they stuck them in their hand so that the little end wrapper was sticking up on all of them in their hand. And they said, okay, close your eyes, put your hand over mine, and then lift it right back up. And they did, and they're like, how many was it? And they said, it's 6. Because you can subitize by touch. You can subitize. It's not at a glance, it's at a momentary sensory impression. It doesn't have to be sight, but we think in those terms.
I wonder if you can do it with sound.
I don't know.
Oh, boy. Now, for example, I think if you were a recording was played for you of two people screaming, you could tell it was two people and not three people or just one person.
I think so.
But after a certain number, you wouldn't be able to tell.
No. And also, I'm not sure how instantaneously it would be. I don't know. That is an interesting thought. Anyway, for those of you just joining us, welcome to Learn to Math with your hosts, Twiglet and Ezzy, who are playing a weird game I don't know the rules of right now.
I don't think they do either.
They don't know how to math. They might be playing Calvin Ball. I'm not sure. Anyway, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, is he messing with a toy or is he actually chewing on that book?
A tag.
Okay, good. As long as he's not messing with that actual book. If he does that, beat him in the face or something. We have a hat is magical. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, like yourselves, write into that email address with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its economical servants, draw those note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. That's the show. We do that for about an hour. So, this regular schedule is weirding me out. How was your week?
It's good. How about yours?
Pretty uneventful, I would say. It was good. I saw a couple of movies. I couldn't even tell you what they were at this point. They were dumb horror movies. On Netflix, like late at night kind of thing and stuff like that. Although, I saw one yesterday. Awful. Don't recommend it. Not even going to tell you what it was, because it's that bad. But, I noted something. So, you know how, especially as I get older, my tolerance for certain things in movies and TV is getting lesser, and I will stop watching things because of stuff like that.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
And a big one, for example, is violence against women.
Yep.
That's a huge one. But here's the thing.
Okay.
In the right circumstance, I'm weirdly, I don't want to say okay with, but I mean, I'm okay is probably the right word. And the example I have is, under certain circumstances in horror movies, there's terrible violence against women. And I am not bothered, really, or, you know, I certainly don't stop watching it or whatever like that. And I had no idea why. And I think, well, I have a theory, but I don't really know. And I think it's the same thing where, as I said before, how I don't like horror movies that are just about, like, bad people. I don't like realistic horror movies. It's the same thing. I think in a movie that is, which horror movies often can be, that is, like, so obviously fake, I'm not in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm watching, like, say, a good TV show, I'm in that, like, I'm not thinking about, oh, that actor is doing this or whatever. I'm thinking about the characters mm-hmm. in the story, mm-hmm. and something mm-hmm. horrible like that happens, mm-hmm. and it bothers me.
Yeah, right.
In that, if I see a rape scene in a horror movie, I'm way more, like, about the weird blocking and the other crap, and the, wow, how much do you think she had to pay in her contract? How much do you think she got paid in her contract to have to do this, and stuff like that? And so then it doesn't bother me, because my brain entirely thinks of it as a consensual creation of a film mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the cut. So if a horror movie is really good and has a rape scene, I don't think I can watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, I've run into this other times too, realistic gore
mm-hmm.
I can't cope with.
Mm.
I don't like stuff that I think. But luckily, usually, like, my limited knowledge of physics saves me from a lot of it. And my limited knowledge of biology. Like, even if it's really cool effects, I'm like, that straight up would not happen. I've had a few of those, and yeah, I watched something that was really like, I'm sorry I watched it, because it was basically torture porn, I don't know, and it had some really horrific stuff, but it was all so, like, ridiculously unrealistic, and especially because, like, some people had terrible things done to them, and then later, like, just got bandaged and were walking around, and I'm like, no, they're super dead. Their legs don't work at this point, even if they're not dead. Like, no, that's not how that works out. But yeah, I found that weird. Because, I mean, we've discussed that there's definite stuff that in the realm of fantasy I'm okay with that I would never be okay with in real life.
Yep.
And I guess this is sort of along those lines, but I mean, it's not like I can't tell TV shows and movies aren't real life, but just, I guess I get invested in it. If it's something I can successfully suspend disbelief on, then I can't watch that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If that's not an issue, then it's not an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, well, I don't know if that's accurate, and I don't know how I feel about it if it is.
That's interesting to think about anyway.
It's some new... I have this a lot with stuff where I feel very strongly about things, and then I'm in a situation that seems blatantly hypocritical. And there are some times where I'm like, I'm being blatantly hypocritical. But there are other times where I'm like, I don't know why situation A makes me feel like this and situation B makes me feel like this, when on the surface they're the same. That happens to me a lot. Which is weird, given I'm a fairly introspective guy. You'd think I would have covered a lot of this.
Well, when it comes to one's inner landscape, there's a lot to cover. I mean, a person can be forgiven for, there's, while you weren't...
Seriously, did you give them catnip when I wasn't looking? Twiglet's eyes are huge and they're going crazy.
You just love podcasting that much.
I'm starting to think that's true.
I was going to say, what in the time you weren't introspecting about this, you were introspecting about something else. So, there's probably some other area of your life that you know a little more thoroughly than this one.
I just like to consider that I know. I like to flatter myself that my self-knowledge is better than a lot of the average individuals.
Well, that's been my experience.
And either that's not true, or maybe this is just it. I'm self-aware enough to aware how many of these contradictions exist. And it's not that they don't exist for other people. It's that you need a certain level of self-knowledge to even be aware of them, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know.
Again, that may be treating myself too nicely.
See, that's a good question. I've wondered the very same things about myself.
Because, I mean, there's definitely stuff that I worry about, feel bad about, get mad about, that if I was less introspective, I would not.
Yeah.
But I like to think there's also a lot of the other stuff that I'm hopeful about or excited about or like about me that I wouldn't be if I didn't pay more attention. But who knows? We did see some roller derby.
Oh, good.
Last weekend. A lot of roller derby.
Really?
Well, here's the thing. When we weren't looking, a new team showed up in town.
In town?
Yes. The Iowa City Bruisers.
Oh, yeah, I think I'd heard about that.
They are a kid team.
Yeah.
And a co-ed kid team. But they're a real team. They have their own bouts and stuff.
Mm.
Which didn't know that until just now. They just finished out their first season. So what this was, when we went on Saturday, was the Bruisers, they appear to have a really broad range. So you got some kids who are like, I'm guessing 9.
Mm-hmm.
But all the way up to like 16, 17, stuff like that. So what we had first was a 30-minute exhibition, no contact bout with the little kids.
Okay.
Which was adorable. and pretty cool to watch. They're definitely getting... And it's not no contact, but it's the you don't try and hit people kind of no contact. And they didn't keep score. Like, they were totally doing it, but, like, there was no scoreboard anywhere, and I have no idea what the score was. Yeah, and they fall down a lot. And they have cool names. My favorite, I think, still is Frozen Pancake.
That's a good one.
That was a good derby name. Although there was one that was just Oh Burrito, which was weird, because Trish and I, frequently, we have this thing where we say, Oh something, like, you know, like a head shake. Oh, you.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll say that about, like, whatever. And so the whole night, we're like, Oh, Burrito. So he was playing King of the Hill by himself. So he's winning. And then after that was a full bout of the IC Bruisers versus some team, the Orphan Brigade. I'm not even sure where they were from. Quad Cities. Oh, from the Quad Cities. Okay. And then after that was a full bout intra-team with the All-Stars. They fought themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So what this means is we showed up at 5, because that's when the doors were supposed to open, although it turns out they opened sooner. But there weren't a lot of people this time, so we got good seats. And we left at 10.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of roller derby. But it was fun. I feel like we've really been bad this season, because I didn't recognize a lot of people on the All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And some that I thought I did recognize but had different names and numbers. I think some of them may have changed their names. And also, our personal favorite batter-up was nowhere to be seen.
What?
Yeah, she wasn't there. I didn't see her in the audience. Nothing. We thought Ophelia Fracture also wasn't there, but she was bench coaching.
Oh.
But yeah, didn't see a few of the regulars. Triple Disaster was not anywhere. Killer Baker was there as an official, like she was doing the tape stuff for some of it, but she wasn't playing. It was weird.
Well, we never even hear about the team at all.
They don't. Nope. They're not super good at.
No publicity. No. Yeah. I mean, there was when they first started, we saw posters up at New Pie. I mean, you know, we heard about what was going on with them all the time, but now we hear nothing ever. Which, you know. I imagine, I'm not on Facebook anymore, but I imagine, I mean, my wife is, so she should be seeing their Facebook stuff if they're putting anything out there.
Pardon? Yeah, and there's some. Their own website doesn't get updated as often as their Facebook does. I don't know. I've got a little bit of worry that maybe the people who are willing and able to do a lot of the legwork have drifted away. Because, well, I mean, there's a lot of people that used to be part of the team.
Sure, how are you keeping up with
them? We go and look. I mean, we actively go to the website and check and stuff like that. Which, and we're not keeping up super well.
And, you know, any decent fan should do that. We should do that. But, of course, we've got all kinds of distractions.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I like them on Facebook and I follow them on Twitter. But it's all noise. I mean, I can't dig out stuff that they say because I don't pay enough attention. Yeah, but we go to the site because
we should do a better job of doing that.
And it helps. Well, I mean, not that she tells us stuff, but we have a connection. Phanisaurus Rex works at ACT.
Oh.
So
how does a co-ed thing work? Just
everybody's out there.
Okay.
Teenagers are intense, especially teenage boys. So it's a little... I hesitate to use a word, but it's a little creepy.
What?
Because you would just see sort of rage kick in a couple times.
Okay.
And like people, Jammer, who wasn't doing too well, so the next time he's around, he screams at the pack, "Get out of my way." and it worked, but I mean, and it wasn't weird. Like funny though. It was like, and like one jammer when he got through was so pumped up that he start as he's skating, he's like punching his fist into his hand really hard in enthusiasm, and
that's a little weird.
It's just, and then there was, and that's not just boys. There was one.
Well,
teenage,
I was gonna say it doesn't.
There was sound there were two particular male jammers who were used frequently because they were good, and who sort of ended up getting this sort of vendetta-esque vibe.
Okay, okay.
And stuff.
But female
but
players
was,
often can
well,
get
there
pretty worked
up too.
Was a female
one who to me, had stuff to prove. Like, she would go after people. And I see that in the adults before, but it just seemed like really a lot. And it's to be expected as well. The teenagers seem like they have a lot more invested in the score. And there were a lot more like calls into question that required official timeouts to determine stuff, like a lot more objections by coaches and stuff like that. It was I don't know.
Well, the thing about roller derby, you know, adult, at least, I mean, because there is adult co-ed roller derby in some places
too.
Yeah, so
definitely.
We should specify that our experience is mostly with all female adult roller derby.
Yes.
At least for the last several years, it's definitely had sort of a punk rock kind of, I mean, we're in this more for fun than for anything else kind of, where, I mean,
not entirely.
No, I mean,
I see moments
they're competitive,
you get invested, but
they're competitive. And you know, they want to win, but when it's over, everyone's smiling and happy and congratulating each other.
It's rare to see people get angry.
Yeah, there's a real high level of sportsmanship in it. Yes. That's one way to put it. I'd never drawn the comparison before, but if before you told me any of this, you'd ask me, all right, so William, how would you compare the all-female roller derby that you and I are familiar with, how would you compare that to high school sports?
Yeah.
I would have told you, well, it's cutthroat in high school sport. I mean, if you think it's cutthroat in college sports, high school sports the exact same, especially in a place like Iowa City.
Yeah.
So then if you ask me, well, do you think that if there was a roller derby team, they'd be the same? I would tell you I'm not sure, because I would think, first of all, I wouldn't have expected co-ed, which doesn't matter. It's just what I would have envisioned.
Yeah.
I would have envisioned that it would have been all girls, and the girls would have been inspired to get into it because of the women who were, and that they would emulate their attitude.
And that's the sad part on this is Trish and I are like, so you do this, you get really good at it, you hit grown up, sorry, dudes. There's nothing for you in Iowa City.
Yeah.
That's sad. But I think they want to be inclusive in these younger ones because, you know, it's very much sort of a role model thing and stuff. So I think that's why they do it.
Sure.
But it very much is an edge thing because I've seen all-male roller derby with adults and it didn't have this attitude. That being said, I still hate all males in roller derby because they do it wrong.
They do?
They work from shoulders primarily, and it becomes a much more erratic and much more violent game. Rather than the hip and the butt and keeping down low, they generally don't do that. Mm. And when you don't keep down low, your balance is not good. So people fly all over. I mean,
No. You're
it's, I guess if you watch NASCAR for the crashes, you want
no,
male
you're,
roller
you're
ab- derby.
You're absolutely right. I mean, male or female, just thinking of how the human anatomy works, you should always be working, like you said, from the hips and the backside and the thighs, you know, keeping your knees bent. And your center of gravity low. I mean, that should be obvious to anyone who's ever been on skates.
Yes, but I think there's just a reflexive thing with males because they know where their power is
in the
anatomically
shoulders.
Speaking. Yep, yep. Shoulders and chest.
Yep.
When you're on wheels, that's not as effective.
Yeah, so
and the all-male one we saw was just like the number, because that's the thing. You think back to roller derby and like a real serious hit with somebody's hip. Those can toss people far. But switch that to with the shoulders, and you can be way more surgical about that because you can go really fast and then just sort of tip yourself that way, and they will take people out and take themselves out. Like,
it's
just kind
it's
of
funny.
Insane.
You know, I've got fairly broad shoulders, but I've never had a lot of upper body strength. I've had my leg strength has always been pretty impressive, so I've always been the kind of person, even in football, I would not really put a lot of emphasis on my shoulders. You know, I'd bend my legs, I'd get as low as I could, and I would, you know, again, my shoulders are pretty broad, so I would hit with my shoulder, yeah. but I'd put a lot of it behind my legs and my hips, and it didn't make me a very effective football player, I'll tell you that, because that sport is really designed
the equipment sort of built that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think in general, because, I mean, that's what they always say about, like, if you throw a punch, you're really supposed to be taking all your momentum all the way up from your hip.
Really get going. No, that's
but
right.
But if I think of, like, me smacking into something or whatever, it's all about my shoulder. I'm all coming from the shoulder. And which is funny, because I'm not sure it's realistic, but in my head, my center of gravity is somewhere below my solar plexus, and that's appropriate, but I'm not sure that's actually where my center of gravity is.
It's hard to say. I mean, I'm also a very tall person, so yeah. I don't know where my center of gravity is exactly.
I'm a really big guy all over, and I have a good-sized belly and stuff, so I'm like, I don't even know where that would lie.
Yeah. But no, I think roller derby is really built to be a leg, hip, you know, kind of sport.
Yeah.
And I never thought about it, about men sort of in a kind of a, what do I want to say? Not a natural way, but in a kind of a, sort of as a function of embodied cognition.
to
think of their shoulders as that. And whereas a woman would think of her
neither
hips
did
that.
We till we saw it, and we were like, "What the hell is going on?" And then we put it together.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's one of those things. Male flat track roller derby, such as it is newer even than women's flat track roller derby, and less common. And they can, I mean, to the degree that when we saw it, it was a team from way far away and a different team from way far away were meeting in this town because it was sort of in the middle. Because there just aren't that many teams at this point.
You mean that the revival is new?
Yes.
Because back when roller derby started...
Well, that's why I specify flat track.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Because that essentially is the revival and is essentially a new sport.
Pretty new. I mean, they had flat track back in the day, too, because that's all there were.
Yeah.
But I know what you're saying.
But I would assume over time, honestly, I think the physics is just going to be more useful if you get low and use your hips and stuff. So I would think... experienced male players would eventually figure that out.
I'm guessing so, too.
But it's just still early enough, and that's just the reflex. And, I mean, that's probably what I would do without thinking about it as well. But it's really... It makes you cringe to watch. A, because, like I said, it doesn't seem right. And B, just because it is way more violent, and it looks way more violent.
So what...
Yeah.
What would happen if a male team went up against a female team? Do you think...
The female team would beat the crap out of them.
That's what it seems like because they'd be falling all over the place.
All other things being equal.
Yeah, all other things being equal. Until they figured out, hey, we're skating all wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, because the shoulder hits potentially can be more damaging to your opponent, but it's guaranteed to be more damaging to you. And if you're up against somebody who has a real stable base and they're down low and whatever, I think you're essentially going to bounce off.
But consider this.
The only issue becomes momentum is also a factor of mass. And so depending on who's on the team. But honestly, there's plenty of big girls in roller derby.
Sure.
So it doesn't come up.
Sure, but consider this. If it was... if the resurgence of roller derby was a male thing...
We'd have spikes on the shoulder pads by now.
Well, they'd have shoulder pads. they'd solve the problems we're talking about,
yes,
not by skating
absolutely.
Different. They'd solve it by having different kind of gear on their bodies.
Yeah.
Which is, that's kind of
interesting. But I also think they'd put spikes on them.
Yeah.
I mean, James Caan made a movie about this years ago. It's called Rollerball. We've seen it. It's terrible.
Well, maybe that explains it insofar as one could argue that roller derby has proven more popular with female athletes. Maybe that explains why. Because it's sort of uniquely suited to how women move and how a woman would compete in that kind of environment.
And
I don't know for sure for
the movement in my head. And again, this is one of those I might not notice, but I'm introspective that way. I like that it's... In my mind, I consider it a woman's sport, and I like it being that way, and I want it to stay that way. I consider that very empowering because I feel like there are far too many guy sports.
Or women's sports that are... we're previously guy sports.
Yes. And just or the girl women's version. Sports that everybody's like, oh, this is a guy sport, but light, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is, that's part, I mean, the empowering nature of it is you and I have talked about as part of the thing. And I hate to say it, to a certain degree, it's also why I try not to get involved, because it's, I have this with lots of things. I was talking with Trish about this earlier. There's a big part of me that's a lesbian separatist feminist, which is a big problem when you're a male bodied. This is like, I think what's best for women is if they never see me again. I find the value in all female groups, and I really wish I could participate in one. Oh, wait. And it's just a constant. Yeah. But as I get older, it's something I do much more consciously. Like, try and encourage things. I like to spectate, but try and encourage things that don't involve me and just involve women. But again, can't encourage too hard, because I'm like, I can't be the one. It's not a Charlie's Angels thing.
No, right.
I told these women to do this, and look what they're doing now. No, it's not. But I want to support that kind of stuff without getting involved.
Yeah. Well, it's part of it is...
Full disclosure, I also don't get involved because I'm a lazy motherfucker.
Something to consider in all this is that... and recall that when roller derby first... I think roller derby originated as co-ed to begin with.
I've heard that as well.
It wasn't men to begin with, or women to begin with as co-ed.
That sounds...
But nevertheless, like today it seems like a female sport. Like, it's a female sport, and it's always been that.
Definitely not. There are definite co-ed leagues and male leagues out there.
But it feels like when women are playing it, that they're not just taking something men have been doing for years, and now they're doing it.
It doesn't
feel like that. It feels like their thing, yeah.
But I didn't even realize for such a long time, because our team and the Quad Cities team at the time, which was mostly who we played before we joined the actual league, were also female coached, and the whole thing was women. And then I found out there's all sorts of these other, and it's so disheartening to me when it's all these badass women on skates, and their coach over there who's telling them what to do is some dude.
Yeah.
Sometimes a dude in a suit. One time it was a dude that looked like he just stumbled out of a frat party.
Well,
like,
and not like, oh not just that, but you know this person's not some former professional male.
Exactly.
I mean, exactly. A roller derby. He can't possibly know any more about it than they do, but he's their coach. But here's the thing. You know, people might wonder, well, why is it such a big deal if it's a woman's thing or if it's all women or whatever? And what I think, when people ask that question, I think it betrays a certain lack of understanding, which is, it's not that there has to be all women things or that it has to be all women. It's that there are so many things that are all men and nobody even questions that. Exactly. Nobody stops and says, why does it have to be all men? Why do all the coaches have to be men? Why do all the athletes... People never ask that question, but then when you have a group that's exclusively women and anyone suggests that it would be nice if it was exclusively women, suddenly it's a big question. Like, there's some problem with that. It's like, well, it's not that the universe needs things that are all women. It's that there, why shouldn't there be? Why couldn't there be?
Why does it need to be all women? Because nothing else is, and nobody finds that weird.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but then the argument starts to come up as this, well, but if you have an organization that's all women, aren't you reinforcing, gender segregation? Of course, the answer to that is no. We're doing something in response to gender segregation, because what else are these women supposed to do when they're excluded from all the stuff that's exclusively male?
If I'm honest, although I don't choose to participate in such things because of my own gender issues, I see the value in all male groups and all male things.
I do too.
That last part came out weird. No, things that are all male. I didn't mean all things.
I know what you're talking about. I do too.
For the listeners, I just thought that was syntactically ambiguous.
Okay.
I don't approve of all things males do. No. Things that are all male. But you need the other side. You absolutely need the other side.
Yeah.
Because
it's
just as much of value to women. Okay. Just so nobody has a heart attack. Not a men's rights activist.
No, no, me neither.
Kind of hate them.
Not even close.
Kind of really hate
them. Not even close.
That being said, in college, I was very excited and really enjoyed. I took a course on men's studies, which was both an anthro course and it was a gender and women's studies.
Sure.
Just one course. And of course, it was quite controversial in a lot of ways because it was Grinnell. And so there were people who were like, why do men only get the one course? And other people who were like, wait, why are you fucking around? This is the feminism discipline. Why do you need men's studies? That's everything else. And nobody could agree. But it was interesting. And it was because it was both gender and women's studies and anthro course. We did a lot with a variety of cultures and issues of male rites of passage and things like that and the roles therein. And that stuff was very fascinating. And we got into all the weird Robert Bly shit and how kind of creepy some of that got. But I mean, I understand the value, but that's the point is if you want to make the argument that nobody should be doing that, I'm willing to hear that argument.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't make the argument that, oh, no, why do you need that? That's against... Okay, then what about all the all-male shit you already have? Like, pick a side.
Yeah, yeah.
Either you see the value in this or you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not like I see the value in it for all the guys with penises, but... or heaven forfend, then we get into the, well, yeah, you can have all women things. They should be women things, you know, cooking clubs and shit like that. And then I just punch you in the throat and walk away.
What it comes down to for me is, if we didn't live in a world that had a ridiculous restrictive gender binary, then we'd probably still have things that were all male things and things that were all female things, and nobody would even care or notice.
Yep.
They would be all male or female for particular reasons that didn't have anything to do with oppression or didn't have anything to do with a ridiculous gender binary. So I don't think the problem is that sometimes a bunch of men get together or sometimes a bunch of women get together. I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is when women are excluded from things when there's absolutely no reason or excuse for that to be happening.
And this is the same argument you have with people who hate affirmative action. And it's dumb because you know what? If we got to make society exactly how we wanted it, we would all hate affirmative action. The reason exists is because anti-affirmative action is all over the place. You shouldn't arbitrarily give more opportunities to minorities. It's like, okay, as soon as you stop arbitrarily giving more opportunities to whites, no problem.
Well, and
once you level the playing field, this is a thing we put in place because we have to, not because we want it like this.
Well, right,
but because we have to give people.
Of course, chance. Then the next claim to that is, well, we're not doing that. Well, except there have been studies recently where two resumes that are exactly the same, except the names changed to a feminine name rather than a masculine name, or a stereotypically African American name as opposed to a normal white person's name, get treated differently in the workplace. And still today, these are recent studies.
At this point, I don't even the whole. Then you just got the camp that are like racism. You're one of two things. You're either a racism is over person, which I'm just like, then you're willfully ignorant, or you're a, well, the stats are that way because, you know, white people are superior. And of course, then you know I'm not talking to you. Again, throat punch, walk away.
Throat punch
is kind of my mic drop. I'm like, you want to know what my argument is? It's punching you in the throat and leaving. I still feel like I win. And so, but that's, this is the stuff that, like, you know where feminism gets complicated? I'll tell you where feminism gets complicated. I'm my authority here. God, I sound like such a patriarch, but no. For me, here's where feminism gets complicated. There are, and I first noticed it in Third Wave, there are people now pushing for, well, okay. Feminism does not get complicated in that we should all be treated equally. and we all need the same opportunities. That's the simple part.
Everyone claims even to agree to with support, on yeah, some level, well, in some way.
Some don't, but those are the throat punchy people. Most normal human beings agree with that.
Okay.
And it's all about, you know, where you're seeing it. And if you can show it, why is anybody still arguing? Where it gets complicated is the people who, and I'm not saying that this doesn't have merit, say, but we're not the same. There are unique issues and circumstances and situations tied into that. And these are the people who get into idea. You can quickly devolve into issues like all penetrative sex is rape and stuff like that. But the concept that, no, you don't just treat everybody the same because there's shit that women have to deal with, or there's shit that women need, and there's shit that happens with women that's not the same as men. And like the idea, originally the idea that maternity leave is unfair because men don't get that. And there's an argument now that says, well, they're all parents, so, you know, everybody should, which is awesome. But there's also an argument that says, but that's the point. Women are different in that they're bearing the goddamn children, and they need that time. And the men don't get it, not because it's only not fair in the fact that they also don't have to give birth.
We're willing to give that up, by the way.
Exactly. Trish says that the women are willing to give that
well,
up.
But
and that's when it starts to get complicated. And again, I'm not saying without merit, but that's when you really have to start to think. So why are we wasting time on this other shit? This is the easy part. The equal opportunities. So why would you have all female things? Because you've got all male things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? So no question then.
Yeah.
Why would you force this situation that might favor minorities over white people? Because you got plenty of stuff that favors white people over minorities.
Yeah.
And again, nobody who's not begging for a punch in the throat from me thinks that we should treat white people and minorities differently.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they should be equal. They just believe it's already done are willfully ignorant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess I get there's a fear involved, and there's the constant belief that whatever your personal experience is what the world is.
Yeah.
But
I
feel like we have some major arguments we need to have, and we're wasting our time on some shit we should not be arguing
about. I completely agree.
Because there's some shit that I genuinely can't tell you what my opinion of it is right now, because it's so complicated and there's so many different sides and factors, and yet we're all fighting about the shit that I'm like, this should be easy.
Nope, I agree. I totally agree. I'm always frustrated by that. And let me speak to that thing about how men and women are different, and specifically about the workplace. Okay. Of course, men and women are physiologically different. And the theories on embodied cognition suggest that that's going to have an effect on a lot of different things. The question is, or do those differences make a difference in the workplace?
Yes.
Or in various other social spheres? Yeah. And of course, the research indicates that it doesn't. And I'm giving you an example from a management perspective. It's true that if I've got a male worker and a female worker, their reasons for taking time off, perhaps sick time off, are going to be different, but they're probably not going to have a different amount of sick time.
Well, and the variance
off
between individuals of the same sex is going to be so much bigger than exactly. The
that's exactly right. And so that being true, it doesn't really matter. You see what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Like, okay, so if this person's, like you said, it's the same as with if it were two men, and this man has a lot of migraine headaches, and this man has insomnia.
Yes.
And so they both call in sick a lot, and they both call in sick the same. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
Yeah.
And if you have a woman over here and she calls in sick because her periods are complicated or difficult for her, so what? It's the same.
Yeah.
On a certain level, it's all the same. It doesn't matter that hers is a quote unquote female problem. Yes. Or whatever. So
now we do add in the extra sociocultural issue in that. So we say men and women are different, but say in the workplace, those differences don't actually impact the workplace. But there's the argument that says the very invention of the workplace as we know it now was, if not to be so glib as to say was invented by men, was invented in a social structure that is patriarchal.
That's right.
That's when you get an argument that we need a complete teardown of society and build it up in such a way that fairly acknowledges both genders. And that, I'll admit, starts getting complicated.
Yeah.
Because even I like certain things about my society. And I don't know that I want to start over per se. I understand there could be a perceived need. I'm ambivalent.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I get that gets complicated.
Well, and I'm with you. I don't know all of the implications for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
Well, one, because it's complicated. Two, because as a male, I'm certainly not going to recognize all the things it needs. So.
But
that becomes a very complicated question.
And that's inherently where you get the difference between a liberal feminist and a radical feminist. Liberal feminist wants equality within society. Radical feminist thinks we need to redefine society in order to give equality.
Well,
that's how I was taught.
That sounds right to me.
And that being said, I consider myself generally a radical feminist.
As do I. I don't know if a timeline gets involved. Like, when does this have to happen? I mean,
and the definition of what society is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think most people would say I'm just about every view I have is radical. But a lot of times there's a misconception that, well, if you could be the emperor of the world, you would make these things happen really fast, like the next day or whatever, instead of realizing, no, these things have to happen in a gradual way that's not going to cause more harm, you know, more harm than it fixes.
Well, and if you're looking from a social standpoint, you can totally, you know, change things at the cost of millions of lives to then be rebuilt because people are statistics.
But here are a couple of things that could probably change tomorrow that would have maybe economic impacts, but it's not gonna make the world fall apart. Yep. Women getting paid the same as men.
Hey.
That could happen tomorrow. Now, it might cause a little economic blip because suddenly a whole bunch of people are getting paid a lot more than they were before. Yeah. But it's not gonna crash the economy or anything like that.
Oh my God.
That's definitely some
what?
Tell them about the $400.
I mean, that's definitely something that could happen.
I don't remember the
$400. Yesterday, and
it's 4,000. It was 4,000.
Whatever.
Apparently, whatever is a factor of 10.
thank you. Yes. Yes.
That
order
should be
of
the
magnitude. Whatever. But no, this is the thing.
Add one number to the exponent.
I don't know that I sent it to you. Because this was one of the weird ones. I actually sent it to my coworkers. There's an article that Trish found about, I'm just going to say, a researcher's wet dream. Because here's the thing.
Okay.
They were studying, I forget, basically children in low-income circumstances.
Right.
And they had a group of people. And I think they were checking like personality stuff and tendencies and stuff, but it was just there was no control group. I mean, it was just a group that long-term longitudinal research. But then something awesome happened that you couldn't make happen. So about a quarter of these kids happened to be of a particular Native American tribe. That tribe got a casino on their reservation. And every member of that tribe therefore got a share of the profits.
Mm-hmm.
And so one quarter of these children's households suddenly had more money.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could tell, the study turned into one about what happens to children when their households have more money.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, like, something that you ethically and just logistically couldn't make happen.
Couldn't have made happen.
Because
right.
They had the kids that, like, all these kids started in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And then this swath of them all got, and it was the same amount. And what it came down to was it was $4,000 a year per person was the share, which is not that much.
No.
and there were statistically significant results.
For a household.
Well, that's what we're unsure of,
The
article. If it was like two parents or stuff like that. Don't know if it's per capita, don't know if it's just adults.
Still, it's not a huge amount. It's like, some people, that's what their raise is, and they're not even very happy with it.
And there was significant change in personality issues, which was increase in conscientiousness. I know there was a small increase in neuroticism, which is actually a good thing in small doses. It can actually help with a lot of stuff. But it was a bunch of stuff that basically are what, in personality things, predispose you towards more future success in career and financial stability and stuff. So being in a house, and what the assumption is at this point is that there was less stress in the house because of this. Mm-hmm. That's assumptions. That's conclusions being drawn. But what is true is that, yeah, these personality markers, which tie into future academic and professional success, were markedly increased specifically in the children that their houses had more money. And it's fascinating to me. It's also really disturbing because it takes a whole new... there's so many ways parents screw up their children, and parents are worried about this. So what if now it's like, you know how you screwed up your children? By not making enough money. Which isn't something you'd hear. But in this case, I mean just barely not making enough money. Mm-hmm. Or like kids, it's like, sorry, if you had grown up in a household that just had $4,000 more each year, you'd be much better off in terms of your psyche. Like, that to me is terrifying. But it's also fascinating. And like I said, it's a situation they couldn't create themselves to test this. So it's just like pure luck that they can get results out of this, because there's no way you could set that up. You couldn't predict it, and ethically you couldn't. You certainly couldn't be like, we're going to test these people, and then we're going to give some of them money for the rest of their lives. No. Like, that's... No. That's some B.F. Skinner bullshit there.
That'd be kind of like taking some fairly poor people, giving them a huge amount of money, but then... telling them they have to give it to somebody else. Wasn't there a reality show like that?
Oh, yeah.
Did that air?
Variants on that, yeah. Yeah, no, I think it might still be airing. I feel like it's CBS.
Oh, they're given the option, right? It's like, okay, you can keep this money, or you can give it to this other really poor family.
and all sorts
or
of
something. Like that. Let's pit poor person against poor person and see what happens.
Fight to the death. But yeah, so that was really interesting too. Before that tangent, I don't remember what we have. We only got a few minutes left, so probably should draw something out of the hat.
Okay.
Or else we're big liars. You should write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with the crap you want us to talk about. Because we might just do it.
Anonymous wants to know, what was the last thing you were nostalgic about?
Oh, I remember the last time I was nostalgic.
This is the right time. This is the right time of year to ask good that time. Question.
Really, I only got a one chuckle out of you. Come on, that's a good joke. That is a good joke.
But I told myself I wasn't going to talk about this stuff because I talk about it every single year. We've been through a fall in Iowa 5 times on this podcast, and every single time I talk about how the leaves are changing. It's great. Yeah. And some of the greatest memories I ever had. And so now, this time of year, I'm being especially nostalgic. So it's hard for me to tell you what the last thing I was nostalgic about, because I was probably nostalgic about 6 things on the way over here. Just seeing a tree that was changing color this time of year and stuff. Probably what my answer is going to be, though, is my grandma. Did I talk about this already? My grandmother made, back in the early 70s, she had a friend who had a kiln, and they did ceramics. And she made...
If you did, I didn't pay attention.
She made this... she didn't make it. You know, you would buy the molds and you would make it that way, and fire it and then paint it and
so
glaze it.
So these weren't thrown; these were molded. Okay.
Yeah, and what it is? It's got some statue. Obviously, it's a jack o' lantern.
Okay.
Like an oversized jack o' lantern. By oversized, I mean in relation to the person that's sitting on it.
Okay.
Like, you know,
that's a weird statement, but okay.
Well, but. There's a person in the sculpture,
right,
and she's sitting on top of the pumpkin that's quite large.
Yeah.
And the person...
And so you fill the mold with pumpkin pie.
The person is a witch.
All right.
And she's...
How can you tell?
An older woman. And
you can't determine witches just by their fashion choices. That's rude.
With, you know, features that are typical for, you know, like a larger nose and a pointier chin and things like that. She's got a witch's hat, you know, a classic pointed witch's hat. And both a cloak and a dress. And she's sitting...
Maybe she's just an unattractive Puritan. You don't know.
She's sitting on the pumpkin with her knees kind of apart, and her dress sort of droops down between, and there's a black cat on there with its back arched.
All right.
She's got a broomstick that she's holding, and it kind of crosses her body and goes in down across the pumpkin a little bit too. Mm-hmm. And there's grass around the pumpkin, and then there's a bell, book, and candle in various places around the pumpkin. Mm-hmm. And the way my grandma painted it, it's very colorful, and the witch looks very, she's like she's cackling or something, very happy, mm-hmm. but also a little bit maniacal, like you know, if you really encountered her, you'd be afraid she was going to do something terrible to you.
Yeah.
And so when I was a kid, I mean, my first encounter with this thing was when I was like, I don't know, four. I found it unnerving. And then when it got darker, she plugged it into the wall, and it turned out it lit up. The jack-o'-lantern lights up, but so do the cat's eyes, and so do the witch's eyes. And so the creep factor just went through the roof.
You were nostalgic for terror.
No, but wait. But I was so fascinated by it that kind of...
I've been there.
You see what I'm saying?
I've definitely been there.
So what I was thinking about was, I can just vividly remember one night being at her house, because our trailer was just across the road from the house, and I was staying there, and I was just sleeping on the floor in the living room, and we had one of those big console TVs that kind of doubled as a mantelpiece, you know, back in the day. And she was sitting up there, and Grandma left it on all night, and so I'm looking at this witch stared at me, partly creeped out, but partly also thinking, this is really cool, this thing is so cool. Well, not long ago, before the old house was torn down, we went through, and I found this thing.
Okay.
And now it's sitting on our mantelpiece at home. And Grandma actually did another one that she painted a slightly more garishly, and we have that one too. And I love this thing so much, and it fills me with such a feeling of nostalgia that I've started sleeping on the couch upstairs with nothing on except that light.
Nice.
And I'll kind of stare at it, and I'll just remember exactly how I felt the first time I ever saw it. And I've actually slept better in the last week or so doing this than I have for ages. And the fact of the matter is, I didn't tell you this, but I got one of those pillow CPAP things and I started using it. And it didn't give me all the same problems that the other, like I felt like I was suffocating, but it's not helping me sleep either. So I'll probably just send it back and forget about it. But that witch sculpture is probably the last thing I was nostalgic about.
Mm.
That's my story. And I probably took up all the time, so you can't say what your nostalgic thing is.
I don't know. I feel like I don't get nostalgic a lot. I am frequently nostalgic for my college years.
Mm.
But I feel in sort of an unhealthy way. I mean, part of it is, I got some great stories out of the time. And a lot of my most hedonistic times were there. So I can tell some wild stories about things I did and stuff. But I feel like most of the time when I'm nostalgic, I now, looking back, see how formative that time was. And so I start doing the, if I could do it over again, I'd do this and I'd do this. Not because it was bad before, but because it could be so much more awesome now.
Mm-hmm.
I now realize the freedom and the power I had at that point, and I wasn't fully aware of it at the time.
Mm.
So I get nostalgic about that a lot. Yeah, I don't feel like I do. I mean, I guess I have trouble with the concept of nostalgia. Because it's a time that you like, or is it a time you wish you were still in? Or, I mean, it gets...
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think most people would think of me as a sentimental person. But for me, nostalgia is just a good memory. It's not like I want to actually be four again, sleeping on my grandma's floor. But it's just a happy memory. And of course, in this case, I can sort of recapture it because I have the thing in my house.
And I'm one of those assholes that I think were very common. I seem to remember mostly the bad stuff. You know, that stuff sticks out in my head. And so I'm not often nostalgic for that kind of shit.
No, of course.
But there are moments. And I mean, to tell good stories and stuff. I like stories.
I think nostalgia. I don't know what other people mean by it, but for me, it just means just a positive experience. There might be a tinge of melancholy in it if I miss it, like my mom or something, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not like I want to go backwards. It's just, oh, this was a great memory. I like thinking about this, and if I do have a piece of it, like I do in this case, that can help make that memory stronger. Well, of course, I'll take it and I'll indulge that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all told, I guess I don't really think of myself as a sentimental person, but maybe I am. I don't know.
If you have a creepy grandma's sculpture story, tell us about it on the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Also, write the hat, themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Also, like us on Facebook. Also, tell your friends. Also, listen again next week. You got anything you want to add?
No.
All right. Throw a punch!
3 solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.